As time has passed in Israel and Palestine, the inert peace process has been replaced once again by increased provocative actions by Israelis and Palestinians. Some Israeli extremists are calling for an annexation of all the lands of Israel once again. Some others are calling for the building of a third Jewish temple in the old city. Meanwhile, the Palestinian Authority has declared at the United Nations that it will no longer be bound by the decades-old Oslo Accords, which established the principle of a two-state solution, among other goals. Clashes between Israelis and Palestinians have increased this month, including attacks that killed three Israelis today. The violence has prompted Israel to call up additional security forces and consider measures to make it easier for Israeli civilians to get their hands on firearms. Joining us with more is Martin Indyk, former U.S. ambassador to Israel, executive vice president and director for foreign policy at the Brookings Institution. Ambassador, thanks so much for joining us once again.
Pleasure, John.
This situation is both familiar and frustrating. Additionally, it's frightening because there are any number of players who could tip this into a unstable new scenario. Who do you think is going to do it at this point? And I know you tend to be optimistic and diplomatic about all of this, but what are the flashpoints right now?
Well, I'm not optimistic at the moment. I'm deeply worried about the way in which a number of elements are coming together to create an escalating level of violence and a new type of violent direction that I'm afraid presages a third intifada, that is to say a prolonged rebellion by the Palestinians against the Israelis in a very kind of personal way. The third intifada, if it's appropriate to call it that, and it's still a bit early to determine, will be a kind of personal one rather than the kind of organized terrorist attacks and Israeli retaliations to them that marked the second intifada. And I say that because the incidents of personal violence using knives and daggers by Palestinian youth, combined, of course, with demonstrations, is an engagement on the very personal level that underscores the way in which these two populations, Israelis and Palestinians, are now so closely intermingled, integrated, and it's not just in Jerusalem; it's across Israel and the West Bank. Where, of course, there are some, I think, 600,000 or 700,000 Israeli settlers. So we've got to the point now where this interaction has become very personal. And I think that's what's going to mark this rebellion. And it's promoted in a context in which social media, in which videos of young Palestinians with knives attacking Israelis and then being shot dead are going viral, in which the use of knives for beheading purposes by ISIS has created a broader environment of legitimacy for this kind of thing, and in which you called it the inert peace process, I think that's probably being kind, there is no hope for a political resolution of this conflict, so that all of these circumstances combine to create a very worrying situation.
Okay, no optimism there. I'll concede that point. Let's talk about the Intifada a little bit, because you're describing something that seems very, very strategic. I witnessed the first Intifada. I reported on the second one. The first was a stone-throwing affair and more personal in the sense of what you're describing, certainly without all the media that was available, as is today. The second Intifada was an extraordinarily bloody affair with suicide bombers and all kinds of attacks directly into the heart of cities like Tel Aviv and other cities, and particularly tourist zones. Do you have, other than anecdotal and observational data, actual a sense from the Palestinians that this is the strategic approach of a possible third intifada, that this is the strategy, or are you extrapolating?
No, I don't think there's a strategy or guiding hand here, and you'll know from your experience with the first and second intifadas, there wasn't there either in the first instance. In what marked those two and why I say we may be witnessing a third is the spontaneity of the rebellion, of this. Intifada means a kind of throwing off. And that's what you have here. In all three cases, the individuals and its young people decided that they'd had enough and then went for it. And in previous cases, the leadership, particularly Arafat in both cases, sought to catch up to it and to ride the tiger. Abu Mazen, the leader of the Palestinians, did his best to stop the second intifada and has since then been preaching nonviolence and promoting the idea that if anything, civil disobedience should be nonviolent and opposes the use of violence and has been cracking down as best he can on Hamas terrorist cells operating in the area that he ostensibly controls in the West Bank. So he's very much opposed to this, and I think he's also very worried that just as across the Arab world in what became known as the Arab Spring, there's a potential here that the young Palestinians will turn on him too, and he's very worried about that. So I don't think there's a strategy there.
Can I ask you a question before we go, just a few seconds? Are there Israeli extremist players that can tip this as well?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up because that's another element which is very worrying about this, which is you have a whole series of Israeli vigilantes who have been operating, particularly in the West Bank. We've seen how extreme they can be in the burning of a family in their home and the killing of young Palestinians, children and teenagers, and pruning of olive trees and so on. And they believe they're in a sense outlaws who believe in taking the law into their own hand, and that can exacerbate the whole thing.
Martin Indyk, former U.S. Ambassador to Israel and Vice President and Executive Vice President at the Brookings Institution. Thanks so much, Ambassador.
Thank you.